Welcome to Mighty Parenting, the podcast with real, raw, and relevant talk about raising teens and parenting young adults.
Welcome to Mighty Parenting, a community where we help you raise teens and parent 20-somethings so they can become happy, successful, and emotionally healthy adults. I'm your host, Sandy Fowler, and just a quick reminder to go to mightyparenting.com to get your free email series on communicating with your teen. And also, I want to thank you for being here and for reviewing the show and sharing the show. I appreciate it more than you will ever know. Today, we are having a discussion about bouncing back. You know, we all have struggles in our lives at various times, and when our teens struggle, it often means that we as parents are struggling as well. I have such a clear memory of exactly what it felt like and how hard it was when my daughter Delt was starting seventh grade. We'd been homeschooling for 6 years. We had now moved to a new town and she was starting seventh grade. So we're talking, you know, middle school girl packs and all those thoughts running through my head. And every day I picked her up. And for the first few weeks, there was frustration and tears and just so much agony. And it was so difficult and painful to be her mom in those moments. All I wanted to do was take her home, cuddle up on the couch, and keep her away from all of that hurt and stress and fear forever. And then when her sister was in college and struggling to function through a burgeoning depression and anxiety issue, every phone call when she's, you know, like 7 hours away, every phone call was, again, a struggle. And it's not easy. And every family deals with it in large ways and small ways throughout the years. We all have to face difficulties and fears and rejections and failures. And it's an important conversation to have to, one, let us know we're not alone, and two, just to get some ideas on, like, how did other people deal with this? How do you actually live with it through it? How do we help our kids through it? And our guest today is going to help us with that. He has navigated plenty of challenges in his life as well. His name is Stephen David Leonard. Stephen is a husband and a father, a retired pastor turned entrepreneur and organizational leader. And he has lived the real life struggles of depression, business stress, having a son with a severe disability, a marriage crisis, all those things that can happen in everyday life. And today he is joining us for a candid conversation about bouncing back and real life and parenting through it all. Stephen, welcome to Mighty Parenting.
Hi, Sandy. Thanks so much for having me. I'm so happy to be here with you today and to talk about these things.
Yeah, I think this is going to be really interesting to chat with you, because I heard you talk about bouncing back, and it was an entrepreneurial podcast, business podcast. And I know that, you know, you're an entrepreneur, you helped to grow your wife's business from this kitchen table hobby to a multi-million dollar company, Lisa Leonard Designs, followed that with the creation of your company, Stephen David Leonard Designs. And you had a lot of experience behind the advice you shared. But as I was listening, you know, and as I learned more about you and the real life personal challenges that you've dealt with, what you had to say and those insights that you had that you shared from a business standpoint, I thought were going to really give us some great insights as parents as well.
Yeah, that's great. It's funny when it comes to just the topic of bouncing back from rejection at all. I resonate so much with what you said right at the beginning about, when our kids are struggling and when they experience rejection, we're, as parents, it takes you into those same, places. I find myself thinking a lot about, I have teenage boys, one with significant special needs. But you know, especially in these teen years, I find myself thinking a lot as I go through my day in business, as I kind of process my own life. I think about how I can learn the lessons that it's taken me a long time to learn and to pass them on to my boys, early. And so I think you're right. I think You know, it doesn't have to be something in the business. A topic like bouncing back from rejection. Yeah, it has a business application, but I think, you know, it applies to really every part of our lives, including the way we parent.
Yeah. I mean, we all need to bounce back from rejection, from failure, but I really am not sure that we're very good at it. And I know that our kids are struggling with it. And I think that some of that comes from us not understanding what's happening. You know, maybe we grew up with that mindset of, well, just get back on the horse, or, you know, pull yourself up by the bootstraps and get on with it. Or maybe the opposite mentality of, oh my gosh, something happened, hide, lick your wounds, you know, protect yourself, sort of a thing. But when you spoke about dealing with rejection, you said the first step is grieving. And that was really interesting to me, this idea that there's this grief process involved. So could you unpack that a little bit? How does grieving play into bouncing back from a rejection or a failure?
Yeah. You know, I think one thing that I've learned is, you know, we go through life and whatever we sort of see and hear and experience, we sort of make up a narrative to explain that. You know, most of us kind of live in our head a little bit, and take that sort of data from what happens in the real world, and sort of we craft a story, craft our narrative to kind of give explanation to it so we know what to do next. And usually if we're facing some kind of rejection, we have something we want. We have something we're trying to get, whether it's trying, you know, for a teenager, whether it's trying out for the cheerleading team or the basketball team, or whether it's trying to, you know, get a grade. And, you know, as adults, there's all kinds of things, projects at work that we're trying to do, or promotions we hope to get. And the point is, we do what people tell you to do. We envision that future, right? We envision what we want. We envision ourselves getting it. We envision it happening the way we want. And when we experience rejection, you know, it's literally the real world coming, you know, in opposition to what we have sort of created in our head. And I think we have to recognize that, like, internally, that's a real loss. Like, there really is something that, you know, that in a way we've experienced getting that thing and losing it, even though we really never actually had it in the real world in the first place. But so I just think that grieving kind of recognizes that sort of internal reality that we, in a lot of ways, have experienced a real loss. And unless we allow ourselves to go there, and to feel the pain of that, and not judge ourselves for that, not worry about other people judging us for that. You know, I think it's hard to move on from rejection unless we really reckon with that loss.
Well, and feeling our feelings is so important. We had an episode with Jude Bijou recently where she talked to us about emotions and that we need to allow them to move through our body, that emotions are energy in motion. And so, as you said, one, recognizing that that's actually a loss, and two, allowing ourselves the time to experience that and release it really makes a lot of sense to me. And you'd also mentioned the idea that, you know, yes, we have this narrative, and in the narrative, actually, some of it is our identity. So when something happens to challenge our story about what could or should or will happen, it can actually be taking a pot shot at who we think we are. And especially for our teens who are trying to figure out who they are, I would think that would be something that could be especially difficult for them. Is that something that you've seen?
Absolutely. Yeah. I mean, to give an example from my life, you know, I think about, and anybody who's, I think, tried to write a book has experienced this, but you know, I put together a book proposal and submitted it to a number of publishers, and, you know, and, at that time it didn't get picked up. And, like you say, I'd sort of created this identity of being an author and not getting the contract that I had hoped for. You know, it made me question, oh my gosh, well then, you know, who am I? Am I this person that, you know, am I this author person? Am I moving in this direction in the way that I see myself? And I've seen the same thing in my boys. You know, a teen, you know, goes out for a sport, or, my son is into, you know, his theater class and, you know, and those things. And, you know, it's like you go out for a part and you don't get it. And for teens, that's an identity forming stage of life. Right. And so anything that counters it, I think it makes them wonder, not only am I the athlete that I thought I was, am I the actor I thought I was, am I the student I thought I was, it makes them wonder, well, who am I at all then, you know? So I think you're right that identity really plays a huge role, in, you know, in rejection. It plays a huge role in what you have to grieve and what you have to kind of reckon with. You know, absolutely.
And as parents, I can already see mistake number one that we make just in having this conversation so far. And that's because we didn't understand the process. We didn't understand that there is this grieving that needs to happen. And I think that we tend to try to push our kids through it with the best of intentions, right? They're unhappy and we don't like seeing them unhappy. Plus that makes us feel feelings that we're uncomfortable with. And so we do this, oh, it'll be okay. Oh, it's no problem. So what might be a better parenting approach to help our teens as they experience these things in their life?
Yeah, I think that's a great point and a great question. I think, you know, that I think honestly, like a lot of things in our engagement with our teens, I think starting with questions is a good starting place. You know, I think you're right that we often want to kind of jump in and either fix something for our kids or we want to move them past it. You know, we have maybe the benefit of, you know, being adults, and we know that, yes, it's hard that you broke up with your boyfriend or girlfriend, but, you know, there will be others. But, you know, sometimes we kind of forget what it's like to be in their shoes, right? And so I think just starting with, you know, asking them questions about, you know, well, what are you feeling? And, you know, what, a lot of times I ask with my son, I just say, you know, well, how are you feeling about that? And, you know, he's a teenage boy, so I don't usually get, you know, big answers to that. So, so it's a lot of follow-up questions like, okay, well, tell me more what you mean by that. And somebody told me once that questions that really open people up are how questions, you know? So I try to think like, okay, so how are you feeling? Well, how did you envision this going? How can I help you? How can you move forward? But just, you know, just tell me more. And just kind of asking a lot of kind of open-ended questions to just let them express themselves, and in some ways help them just to, like you said earlier, feel their feelings and then to just validate that, to just say like, you know, gosh, I can imagine if I went out for that team and I didn't get picked, you know, I think that'd be really hard for me, you know, and just validating what they say. Because if we can stop and, you know, again, think about our own lives like that, you know, we do have some sense of what they're going through, and we know how we experience it. And a lot of times, whether you're a teen or an adult, you just want somebody in some ways to say like, yeah, I get it. What you're experiencing is normal. And it makes sense that you feel the way you do. That's how any of us would feel in that situation, you know? And I think it's easy to kind of rush to the like, oh, it'll be okay, don't worry. But that skips the step of saying like, you know, there's a reason you feel sad. You really wanted something. It's important to you. And that didn't happen. And that's a loss. And it's okay to feel sad about that loss.
I love your questions. So anyone listening, I got them all and they're all going to be in the show notes. So you can go to mightyparenting.com and get that list of questions because they were really great questions in that they weren't pushing our kids through it. As you said, it was letting them be there. And again, as parents, it's very challenging to just sit with our kids. I think there would be great value here if we can truly just sit with them, sit by their side or hug them or put an arm around their shoulder, whatever is comfortable and works in your family with that child. But to even just say, it's almost starting at the end there first, going, I see you're upset and I'm sad that you're upset and I get it. And I'll just sit here with you. And then almost going backwards and moving into the questions, kind of, you know, depending on your kid, which way works better for them. I love the questions and I love that idea of just sitting there. I'm wondering that, one of the things that I liked about this was that asking those questions and sitting with them were teaching them how to move through this. Because I know with teens, teaching can feel like preaching to them and then they block us out. So I like that your approach actually demonstrates to them, you know, how to move through this process.
Yeah, it's so funny that you should say about preaching. So as you know, I was a pastor for 10 years. And it's possible that I've been accused by my son of preaching to him too much. so I try to back off that. You know, like you say, I think all parents get accused of that at times. And, you know, I it's easy for me to step into that kind of teaching role, you know, but I do try to really focus on those questions and just acknowledging where they're at. I'm just thinking about a kind of recent experience of my son with a friend, and and they kind of had a plan and it didn't go the way he thought, and you know, and he was really disappointed, and you know, and it was, you know, and again, I just asked him some questions about it, and along the way just said like, you know, hey, I just want you to know, son, like, I understand that you were excited. That didn't happen. Now you're disappointed and it's really hard. And like, you know, I want you to know, like, I was watching the whole thing and I was excited for you. And I kind of feel the disappointment too. Like, I'm not you. I'm not trying to say that I'm experiencing the same thing, but I get it. You know, I was kind of there with you and this was going to be a cool thing and it didn't happen. And, you know, and I feel my own sense of disappointment for that alongside you, and kind of tell me more. And we got to have a really good conversation about it. And we're on the grieving step, but we were eventually able to get to a place where like he was kind of able to get a new lens and a new perspective on the situation. And so I think, like you say, just sometimes just allowing our kids to just be for a few minutes and experience, just kind of experience the reality.
Yeah. You said, you know, be that way for a few minutes. It might be a few minutes. It might be a few hours. It might be a few days. I mean, obviously we don't want them to stay there forever. And you talked about the next step being taking one step forward. But again, the way you talked about it was not come up with a big, huge plan and what else are you going to do? And what it was truly just do one thing, one tiny thing even. And what is the value in doing that one little thing?
Yeah, it's funny. I'm such a believer in the taking one tiny step forward. Whether you're facing a rejection or whether it's, there's a goal that you have or a project you need to work on or anything. we joke with our team that, like, you know, you have this giant project that you've got to get done. And sometimes I'm like, seriously, if your next step is pick up phone, that's legitimate. Like, you don't even have to dial, just start with pick up phone. You know, dial can be the second step.
Well, but know? it's so true. And I'm laughing about this because my husband and I do this with our kitchen. You know, we get busy and we all work from home offices and things. I mean, he tutors out of the house and I do sessions out of the house too, but essentially our offices are here. Our, you know, kids are in and out because they're moving in and out at this point in their life. But it's like, all of a sudden we look around and like, what happened to the kitchen? And I'll be like, okay, I'm just going to keep putting the new dishes I dirty into the dishwasher, or washing the new dishes that I dirty. And then it's like,
exactly.
Okay, I'm going to wash my dishes and I'm going to put this one other plate in the dishwasher. And the next thing you know, it's like, oh, I did one thing. And then was like, well, that wasn't a big deal. I can put one more plate in, and it snowballs. And I do the same thing with work. It's, oh my gosh, I have to go out and talk to these businesses about sponsoring my event. I really don't want to do this. And it's like, just get dressed. What would you wear if you're going to go do this? And then again, it's that snowball thing. But, you know, getting dressed doesn't mean I have to leave the house or talk to anybody. It just means I got to go in my closet and point at something and put it on.
Exactly. No, I think that's so true. And I think one of the things that happened, a huge sort of effect of rejection, I think, is, you know, you have this momentum, right? You're working towards something that matters to you. I mean, one way or another, you know, if you're experiencing rejection, it's because something that you want didn't come to pass. And usually when that happens, we have built up some kind of momentum toward that thing. You know, maybe we've put a lot of work into a project. Maybe, you know, we've prepared for an audition or for a tryout or, you know, kind of on and on and on. And then when it doesn't happen, when we're told no one way or another, then it means in a lot of ways, like, that momentum just kind of got stopped in its tracks. And I think that, you know, and I think it's critical that, you know, we need, in order to sort of move on, in order to bounce back, we've got to create a new momentum. And, you know, it's usually my experience anyway, is that in the pits of rejection and you know, and kind of all the negative feelings that I have about a rejection, it's hard for me to kind of just grab back a hold of that, you know, of that original vision and just immediately turn around and go for it again. You know, I noticed that, like, I need to do one tiny thing. I can usually ramp up to, you know, reach out to somebody and, you know, and ask, hey, I tried to do this. It didn't work. You've done this. What did you do? You know, have you been through this? What did you do? You know, and it's kind of like, it's one step, it's safe. And I would say any single tiny thing that you can A, think of, and B, actually do, it's just amazing how it begins to get your, you know, it begins to sort of like help you recreate the new narrative that you're going to need to create to take new steps forward.
And I love that idea of creating the narrative. I don't know why, that's just really resonating with me. So that's very interesting. So when we're doing this, we're parenting, right? And we were sitting with our kid and being with them, letting them grieve. How can we encourage them to take this one step forward without pushing or preaching?
Yeah. Well, I'll just say on the front end, I don't do it perfectly every time. once again, I get told that I do those things, but, you know, I think one, your point a few minutes ago on the grieving stage, I do think we need to be sensitive about whether this is an issue that that our teen, you know, is this an issue that's a few minutes grieving? Is this an issue that's a few hours a day? You know, different thing. I mean, it's the same for them as it is for us, right? Depending on how important something is to you, it's going to take probably, you know, a smaller or greater amount of time to grieve it. And so I think one, we just got to be sensitive to that. And we know how important things are to our kids. And if we're not sure in a situation, then we should explore that with them, you know, before we kind of press on. But kind of recognizing that, I think, you know, at some point we can start once again, asking probing questions to say, you know, okay, so this is where you are now, you know, what do you want? You know, do you still want this thing? Do you want to do something else? You know, sometimes again, I'll just the going out for a team, you know, it might be, well, I didn't get on the basketball team. I mean, that's just gone. Like there's nothing you can do. The season is now started and I, you know, I didn't get on the team and you can't play basketball for the team this year. That, you know, so what else can you do? Well, maybe there's a club team that you can play for in your town. Maybe it's okay, I'm going to go out for volleyball. That's, you know, for spring sports, you know, for the next thing. And, you know, kind of identifying like, okay, well, there's another sport out there. There's another season out there. And maybe I can work toward that. And so I think, you know, helping to explore possibilities and with brainstorming, I think like just let any silly idea be and help your kids to let any silly idea kind of come to the surface. And then, you know, and then literally just ask, you know, like, okay, so then what's one tiny thing? And honestly, sometimes even coming up with that idea is that tiny step, you know, sometimes that is the next one step that you can take is, gosh, maybe I could do this sport instead of that sport, for example.
Yeah. It's a conversation and this comes up over and over. Anyone who listens to Mighty Parenting for any period of time is like, okay, I get it. It's a conversation. And your conversations follow very much in the vein of what we talk about as Mighty Parenting conversations. It's this no judgment, asking open-ended questions, leading in the sense of leading them to open up to you, but not leading them to answers and offering to support, but asking, as you said, you know, how can I help you? What would you like me to do? But also doing this coaching and helping them to not just get stuck in that grief process, but to move through it, go on, look for that one tiny step forward. Another piece to that you've talked about is having someone who believes in you. And the little bit of a conundrum here, because hopefully we as parents really believe in our kids, although sometimes we find out that we don't, you know, we don't really believe that they could do something. We don't trust that they will handle something well. Sometimes we really aren't that person. And sometimes we are that person, but our kids don't think we're that person. And so again, I'm in this place of, okay, how can we help our kids to find somebody or to identify somebody in their life who not only believes in them, but the kid believes they believe in them?
Yeah, I think that's, it is so important. And I do think we have to recognize there are things that we can be that person for our child. And there are areas where it's tough, either because, like you say, it's on our end, and maybe we have a hard time believing, or it's on their end. We're just not, doesn't matter how much we believe in them. They need somebody else because we're their parents and we're supposed to, you know? And so, but I think really having people around us who believe in us and who can encourage us really is a huge piece, of bouncing back from rejection. I think it's a huge piece of being successful in life. And, You know, one of the things that we talk about with our son is, you know, we want to help him feel empowered to take a certain amount of control of his own life. And so, you know, one of the things that we can do as parents is connect our kids with people who can help them. And sometimes that's us. Maybe we have a skill or we have, you know, something that we can do. Maybe sometimes it's just them actually knowing that we believe in them, which, by the way, no matter how much your kid says they don't care, they do. No matter what they say, the first person they need to believe in them is us, as mom and dad. It's I think very challenging for kids to move forward without that. So when we're struggling with that, that's something that, you know, that's something that we should even think about, like, okay, well, maybe I don't see my kid as a runner and I'm not sure how he or she's going to do if they go out for track, but do the same thing with yourself that you might do with them. Think, okay, well, wait a second. I belong to a gym. What if I brought my son or daughter with me to the gym twice a week and, you know, had them do something, you know, there, would that make them faster? Probably. You know, instead of thinking in terms of absolute, like in absolute terms, you know, oh, they're a runner, they're not a runner, or they're a singer, they're not a singer, or whatever the issue is, think like, well, how could I help them take a step forward and at least explore this for themselves? And then we can do the same thing for them, right? We can connect them, with people we know. Maybe we have a family friend who, you know, who loves them and they love, or an aunt or an uncle, or, you know, somebody else that we can kind of bring along to kind of step in alongside us and alongside our child to be another voice to encourage them and come alongside them. So, there's, you know, I was just talking with my son this morning about, hey, you know, if you want to improve in this skill, like we can find somebody to meet with you, and it can be once or it can be 100 times, but, you know, if you want to grow in that and you want to do beyond what school offers you on this front, we can find somebody who can help you. And so there's, I think, lots of ways to kind of facilitate that finding, having somebody to believe in, or, you know, to believe in them.
It reminds me of articles that I have read about the importance of grandparents. And it doesn't have to be a grandparent, but this is one of the things that I have read about, is it's one of the roles that grandparents oftentimes will fulfill in a child's life, is they do believe in them more so sometimes than parents do, because we get a little clouded with our own responsibilities to our child and our own thoughts and feelings, right, wrong, or indifferent, about, you know, how their life turns out and making sure that they get the life that we want them to have and all of those things that can muck it up and get in the way. Whereas grandparents will just love on them and think they're amazing. And then there are also, I was kind of thinking through, you said, you know, connect them up with some people. So, you know, there are teachers, coaches, grandparents, you mentioned, friends of the family is places that we can just kind of, they connect up our kid, but it's not necessarily that we connect them. It can be pointing our kid in that direction, I would think. I mean, we're not going to contact the coach of whatever team, whether it's a middle school, high school, college sport, or as you mentioned, a club sport. I know my daughter loved playing the YMCA sports rather than the intensity of a high school level. You know, we're not going to get involved there, but this is a place where, does it make sense for us to just say, hey, why don't you ask your coach if they can meet with you? Or is there another way that we can encourage them to reach out to these other people in their life?
Yeah, absolutely. Absolutely. Well, and you know, and I would even go so far as to say, you know, sometimes we know people, they don't, or we have relationships, they don't. And, you know, just like we would do for a friend or a colleague, we might need to be the one to make the introduction, you know, or to make the initial arrangement. I, and, and then saying that, I think you're right that, and it's funny, I just had this conversation with my son on the way to school this morning. But at some point, especially for teenagers, I mean, they need to be the one that steps in and carries the ball, right? Like they, as teenagers, I think it's very important for them to take responsibility, you know, for their lives. And if they want something, and especially if they want to grow, they want to improve, they want to, you know, yeah, just reach toward a goal. I think at some point they really have got to be the one who is initiating, you know, to make that happen, because otherwise it's just mom and dad kind of doing it for them. Right.
Yeah. Yeah. And I think there's some middle ground there. I know, my daughter is in this both my girls are in this transition between college and real life. And, one of them is questioning some of the choices she's making about career and whatnot. And Dennis Trittin, he's been on the show a couple of times and he mentors students. And I was like, oh, wow, he talked about this on the last podcast. So in my mind, it was, well, you know, I can pop an email to Dennis saying, would you mind if I share your information with her? So that I check to make sure that's okay with him. And that's somewhat what you were talking about. In a sense, it's that initial reach out of going, hey, this is what's going on, and are you okay with being part of it? But then turning that rein over and saying, I know Dennis through my work. This is what I know about him. This is why I think he might be able to be helpful to you. Here, you can reach out and ask him if he can do a mentoring session with you. Does that seem like a decent middle ground, kind of what you're talking about?
That's exactly, yeah, that's exactly what I'm saying is, you know, it's funny. I know in the professional world, when I connect people for something, you know, oh, I know Bob and I know Susie and I know, you know, whatever, Bob needs X and Susie does that or whatever, you know, and I know they don't know each other. My introductions are almost always along the line of, hey, you know, Bob meet Susie, Susie meet Bob. Here's where the intersection is. I told you both about each other. And now it's in your hands, mm-hmm. You know,
that's exactly what I do too.
Yeah. Because, and you just have to, right? Because you can't manage somebody else's relationships. And I think that the tricky part of parenting teens on that front is, you know, sometimes we've got to assess as parents, like, do they have the relationship themselves with somebody to be able to initiate, or has school or whatever, have they learned the skills they need yet to be able to do this? You know, like where are they in this process and how much kind of coaching do they need? But at some point, you know, we're helping them transition from childhood to adulthood. And so, you know, so I think that's right. Finding kind of a middle ground of helping, coaching, assisting, while still helping them kind of increase their own sense of ownership and responsibility that, you know, they do have to learn that. I mean, really that goes right along with what I was saying about empowering. Like I was saying to my son today, like, I want you to learn that, like, you are a much more powerful person than you may think. And you hold a lot more power in your hands for your own life than you may think you do. And so if you're kind of unhappy with this part of your life, one response is to kind of shrink back and say, I don't like this, but not really do anything about it. And another is to say, all right, well, what can I do? And there's a lot of options open to you, but you have to engage in them. You know, you're going to have to show up for an extra practice, or you're going to have to show up for tutoring, or you're going to have to, you know, talk to your coach, or you're going to have to talk to your teacher about your paper or whatever. And so, so I do think it's kind of that both and, but again, and it's, you know, and in doing that, they will really experience, I think, that, you know, what we're kind of talking about experiencing that person believing in them again, whether it's asking for our help as mom and dad, or whether it's asking for a family member reaching out to a family member or someone outside the family, that, you know, that they can really experience that, that person who can come alongside and cheer them on.
Yeah. And you kind of touched on this idea too, just a reminder to all of us that this process is different for every one of our kids, depending on them, their needs, their age, their development. What one kid needs at 12, another kid might not be able to handle until they're 22, or, you know, a precocious child takes it at 8 or 10. So it's knowing your child and feeling that out, but giving them what they need to keep moving through these steps and moving forward. And it's all been kind of leading up to this final point that you made about bouncing back, where you said, and I love the way you worded this, you said to take the brutal feedback and let it guide you to a hopeful future. And I just love that you termed it that way, because, right, we started with grieving. This is brutal. This is painful. This is difficult. But what I've heard as you've talked us through these steps is that there is this, okay, yes, it was brutal. And okay, I'm taking that though, and I'm moving this forward, and I'm turning it around, and I'm figuring out what I can do now. And it is building that hope. And I really liked that wording for it. And again, I know that as parents, especially if we're a type A parent, a high achiever, or a fixer, we can tend to want to jump the gun with our kids and push them straight from them just getting the words out of their mouth, telling us the bad thing that happened or the disappointing thing that happened, and us pushing them straight through to this final step of, well, that's okay. It'll all be fine. What are you going to do about it? How can you turn this around?
Right.
And I know that this is an important step. So we need to go through all these others, but how can we know when maybe it is actually time to have this conversation, or how do we even start this conversation of, yep, this was brutal, and what did you learn? How are you going to move forward?
Yeah. Let's be honest. It is tricky to know when that time is. And I mean, this is, you know, we're talking about four steps here. These four steps might happen in 30 seconds. They might happen over a number of days. You know, again, I think one, we just have to be sensitive, you know, to what the issue is, to who our kid is, to where they are in their own development, and all those things. You know, I know for me, a lot of times I think about it, I try to kind of just put myself in their shoes as best I can and think, okay, so, you know, what's something that I've experienced that's on par with this in my own life recently, and how did I feel, and how long did that take me? And I'm an adult, they're a kid. So, you know, probably whatever it took me, if it took me a week, it's probably going to be a month for them. You know, if it took me 5 minutes, that's probably half a day, you know? you know, and just, I think in some ways, part of that is just kind of connecting up with them. Right. And that'll be a good guide for kind of the timing and approaching, I mean, we keep saying this, but approaching, with questions and approaching with sensitivity. So I think on the timing issue, I think that's some of the guidance I would give.
And listening to you, I think the answer that came to me was what you actually just said. And there's, they're going to walk through these steps. And so it's actually going, okay, we moved from grieving to taking a step forward. And now they've connected with someone who believes in them. And then just continuing to feel from that point, but remembering as a parent not to jump from, Mom, Dad, I really wanted fill in the blank and it didn't happen. I didn't make the team. I didn't get into the school. I bombed out in the competition. I got a crummy grade. I got a crummy score in solo and ensemble, whatever it is, to not jump from that to the end. But when they're ready, when they've walked through these steps, that that then, yes, we can take the feedback and let it guide them to hopeful future, as you said. Are there common things to look at, as, you know, like, how do I look for lessons learned in here?
Yeah, you know, it's funny. So I'm going to use an analogy for something that has been kind of helpful for me in this. I've been doing some acting classes myself, and it's such a paradigm sometimes for some of these things in life. You know, you go up in front of class, you put yourself out there, you do this, you know, you perform. There's nowhere to hide. You know, it's like you have to put yourself out there, and then you stand there in front of everybody while the acting coach or teacher or whatever tells you what you did wrong, right, and what you did wrong, and what you need to do different. You know, and it's like there's just very few, I think, places in life where you're actually standing on a stage having somebody tell you what to do different. But we feel that way a lot, right? Mm-hmm. Like and at work for us as adults, you know, at work, you know, you turn in a project or something, and then your boss is like, oh my gosh, you've got to do this and that and whatever. And it's like, okay, you feel like you're standing on a stage because you're performing in a sense for the person who matters in that scenario. And our kids feel that way too, whether it's a grade on a paper or a test or whatever, or whether it's going out for a team or, you know, the various things that you mentioned. And I think to be honest, what I've kind of learned in life on this is, if we really want to grow, if we really want to take steps forward, and we really want to create that hopeful future, like, the reason I call it like the brutal feedback, usually whatever the thing is that hurts the worst, like whatever it is that we feel the most offended about, or are, you know, or we feel most embarrassed by, or we feel, I mean, whatever really is the thing that really presses a button for us or for our kids, that's probably the first thing we need to look at. Because somebody who isn't us is telling us something, and they're much more objective about it than we are. And so that's where I tend to start. Now, it doesn't mean we have to agree in the end with everything that somebody tells us when we experience rejection. But I would say start there and then think about, okay, is there any validity to this? And you don't have to swallow the whole bitter pill. It may be that there's part of it that you need to listen to there. But if it's pressing a button, that probably means something. It probably means there's something to it that you kind of already know.
Yeah, that is interesting. So I'm just going to kind of go back and sum this up again. And we need to recognize and accept that when we or our kids experience a rejection or a failure, which is a form of rejection, that there's going to be a grieving process. And I love what you said, as I mentioned, that we create narratives in our life to explain what happens in our world, and a rejection challenges that narrative. And so really there is a real internal loss. So we need to give our kids time to experience that grief. And we can just sit with them. We can ask them, you know, some open-ended questions about how they feel about it, or how they had envisioned it going, or things like tell me more, which, like I said, we'll put all those questions in there, and then validate their feelings on that. Yeah, I get that. I'd feel the same way if that happened to me. I think that's what most people would do. And so after they've gone through the grieving process, then they can take one tiny step forward. And it can be super, super, super tiny. Like you said, it can be pick up the phone. It can be even just deciding what that next tiny step can be. But it takes and helps us start building momentum again after our momentum from the original idea or project or attempt got stopped when we got that rejection. So we shift things and start creating new momentum. And then we can find someone who believes in you, or hopefully you already have identified. This is something we don't have to wait until our kids are rejected to do. We can help them identify people in their life who believe in them, maybe different people for different areas of their life or something, but helping them to realize that this is someone they can talk to about this, and that person can help them as they move through it. And we as parents may or may not be those people. And the older they get, you go through cycles of when that's you and when it's not you. But you may be able to introduce them to somebody who can help them out. And then the fourth piece is taking the brutal feedback and letting it guide you to a hopeful future. And we can support our kids in doing that, again, with those same strategies, really, of listening and being there and asking those open-ended questions and asking them, okay, you know, what do you think about this? What is, and I love that, Stephen, that you said, you know, what's the most painful thing in here? What do you think you can learn from that? And encouraging them to ask these other people who believe in them, you know, what they can learn from this experience. And Stephen, I know you've done some very interesting and different things. You actually have two websites with jewelry design. And the reason that it came to mind to me here is that it's that hopeful piece and kind of inspirational piece. And one is your wife's, which is, I believe, just at lisaleonard.com. Is that correct?
That's correct.
And yours is at stephendavidleonard.com with a PH.
That's correct.
Stephen with a
PH. Yep. Yep.
Okay. And I know you're doing other things as well. So for any of the parents who are listening who would like to find out more about you, connect with you, obviously they can go to Stephen Leonard Designs or Lisa Leonard Designs to see the jewelry that you guys are creating, as well as other things. Especially your site has gone way beyond that. But is there any place else that you want them to know about where they can make a connection or get more from you?
Yeah, I would say the other place, of course, I'm active on social media. Both my wife and I are active on social media and our blogs, which is part of the websites. I think those are other great places to connect with us.
Okay, great. And thank you so much for taking the time to have this conversation with us today.
Absolutely. Thank you so much. It's such a great topic, I think. And let's face it, parenting teens is not the easiest thing. It's not for the faint of heart. And rejection is a tough topic. And so thanks for having me on and letting me talk with you and your audience today.
Yeah, I appreciate it. And Mighty Parents, thank you for being here today, for being part of the conversation and supporting us and listening and sharing the podcast. I appreciate you. And remember that you are a mighty parent. So you've got this. And I will see you next week.